Time for our weekly catch-up with Matt Stringer, the Chief Executive of RNIB, to take a look at some of the big stories coming from the charity. Matt, thank you once again for joining us.
Hello, Alan. Always a pleasure. Good to speak to you.
We've got a few topics to get through, as always, today, Matt, and we're going to start off with ticket closures, a huge RNIB campaign. The consultation now has closed, but there's been, I think, a great uptake in people getting in touch with their MPs, getting in touch with the media. It really has hit a bit of a nerve.
Yeah, consultation has just finished on the 1st of September, and we now move into another phase of dealing with whatever comes out of that consultation process. And you hope, you know, the ministers and the rail operating companies have taken note not only of the enormous groundswell of information we provided from all our beneficiaries and different groups in a variety of media. Even this week, we've had one of our team, Bernie Reddington, on Radio Norfolk or BBC Radio Norfolk talking about it. Now we've had teams providing videos. And as you say, we've been communicating effectively through petitions and through contact with MPs. So, you know, the first victory was to get the consultation period extended to the 1st of September. The next sort of battle, if you like, is now engaging with whatever comes out of the consultation process. And I think feel very proud of the RNIB. I think we've done a very assertive job and been noticed about this. I had a nice email from one of my predecessors, Ian Bruce, today. 20 years ago, as the Director General of the RNIB, you know, having said how much he thought the campaign we'd run was very, very impressive and impactive, which was a nice bit of feedback. Also, in the last day or two, I've had a nice letter from my MP, who I lobbied, Vera Hobhouse, who showed me the letter she'd written to the Transport Minister, you know, utilising, marshalling a lot of the statistics and facts that we provided as the RNIB. I feel we've done a really good job and should be quite proud of ourselves and take quite a bit of confidence from the impact we've had and the notice people have given to the arguments we've made. I think so far so good, but we're only some way through this and we've still got to engage and know what comes out of the consultation.
Indeed, several hundred MPs contacted. We've had letters to media, as you say, people on media across the UK. And I think although, you know, this is mainly ticket offices in England, some other parts are slightly affected, but you know, I was talking to people before about this and I say, well, it doesn't matter where in the UK you are. There may come a point where you travel into and out of and through stations which will not have ticket offices, you know, on your travels, visiting or for, you know, for socially or for work or whatever. So it does have an impact possibly on everyone.
No, it does. And I mean, I know, you know, it's mostly England, but, you know, as you and I have spoken before, I think Glasgow Central is one of the stations in Scotland where they're proposing this as well. And as you say, a lot of people from Scotland who will be jumping on a train in Glasgow, Edinburgh, whether you're only going to Carlisle or Newcastle, never mind going down to London, it does impact you. You know, the return journey is more difficult. Used to having a facility at a station you use, it's no longer there.
And as you said, Matt, the consultation now closed. We'll, of course, follow this. More work to come. But let's look at actually a quick good news story about rail travel as well. More news on some tactile maps.
Yeah, well, one of the things we do as a charity is we have some good corporate partnerships. We're trying to influence and inform, you know, what those partners are doing in terms of the way they operate. And one of those things is around accessible information, accessible goods and services. And there's a couple of interesting things this week. So on the railway side of things, we've been working, as we have done for many years, it predates my time in the RNIB, in putting tactile maps into railway stations. And last week, we just put new tactile maps into three stations in Hull, Dewsbury and Manchester Airport. Clearly, you know, Hull and Manchester Airport, big stations, lots of people travelling through. But again, it's all part of trying to make travel and transport more accessible, more comfortable, safer for visually impaired people. And we know from our insight, from our beneficiaries, we've just done some work early this year on travel and transport, that there's only a minority of people feel comfortable moving around the transport network. It can be dangerous, communications can be inaccessible. A lot of comms is visual, whether it's notice boards, you know, about stations or even at bus stops, you know, telling when the bus is coming and where it's going. But as we've just been discussing on ticket offices, you know, you can't get the help you need and you feel uncertain about setting off in the first place. So, you know, tactile maps going into three stations is a small win, but it's all part of making the experience as accessible and inclusive as possible. The other news this week is M&S, who are now running a collection of a range of tactile cards. They're not the first, you know, retailer we've engaged with on this or have done this, but they're probably the biggest and, you know, the most newsworthy. It seems to have come out of a sort of internal staff recommendation from one of the team who send ideas into the CEO and they put them into place. I saw earlier in the year they did something about putting sort of breast cancer communications and information into changing rooms where people would go and try on bras because that was an obvious obvious place to get that communication across. And I think it's all part of M&S. They've had a strong sort of philanthropic tradition in their history. I used to work for them, so I know that. But I think, again, it's a sign of organizations, big organizations, really sort of waking up to their social responsibilities and realizing that they've got to support every part of society. So it's only one thing, it's a range of cards in M&S, but I think it's symptomatic of a mindset which is changing, which I think is a critical thing.
Yeah, another good win there. Let's finish off, Matt, with some sport. We've just had the Ipswich World Games in the UK in Birmingham, the biggest games of the type for blind and partially sighted people. 70 countries, something like 1,800 athletes and staff there as well. RNIB Connect Radio were there covering the event. I think we managed to get 106 different interviews, which are now podcast as well. So it was a fantastic time there. We got to try some stuff as well, and you came down for a visit.
It's useful to have a reflection, I think, on... Well, I think we're a fabulous games. And I think, you know, when I was there on the first Monday, Birmingham University, you know, you got a sense of what was happening in things like football and judo and some of the areas where people could try stuff. And I know I tried soccer and you turned your hand to soccer and archery, Alan, I know. But I think over the week, you know, watching the coverage and the social media, you really got a sense of the energy, the dynamism, how it had spread across the region, you know, with goal ball in Coventry, events at Birmingham University, cricket at some local schools, and the final at Warwickshire's ground at Edgbaston. And you saw some real, you know, not only energy and commitment, but, you know, fabulous performances and real joy with the winners. I've ever seen the photos, I think, of Argentina winning the women's line football in a big Japan in a final. I think our own David Clark gave out, or a previous colleague David Clark gave out the trophies. But, you know, immense support, immense passion, excitement. It's just fabulous, actually. And clearly we need to take stock and learn some lessons and realise what went well, what we could improve. Yeah, we were one of the main sponsors and played a big role in helping put it on, along with our good friends at British Blind Sport. And I think we, you know, we stand ready to just carry on playing a part in the run into the next games, which 4 years' time. And as I was speaking to the president of IBSA when I went, you know, there's a number of countries lining up to do the game. So there's a lot of appetite to put it on, actually, which is great to see. So I'm looking back with a really rosy, warm feeling about it. And I think it critically, you know, a great platform for the competitors and the spectators and the coaches to show just how much visually impaired people enjoy sport, participate to a very high degree and get a lot out of it.
Indeed. And well, you scored a goal at blind football. I got a gold in the archery as well. So good times.
Yeah, I think, as we just said, Alan, a bit of beginner's luck.
Yeah, that's probably more like it.
Hitting the gold. We'll take that. We'll take that. I think we now retire, hang our boots up and move on to the next thing.
Indeed.
Yeah, great to participate and a lot of fun and energy. I really enjoyed my visit last week.
And if you want to hear more from the games and you podcast, go to your favourite provider, search for RNIB and see sport differently, and you'll find all the audio there. In the meantime, if you want more information from RNIB on some of the topics we've been discussing, or loads more for you, advice and support there too, go to rnib.org.uk, get the helpline on 0303 123 9999, or ask your Amazon Echo device to call RNIB helpline. That's it for another week, Matt. Thank you very much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, Alan, my pleasure. Some nice things to talk about. You know, I think we're all moving into the autumn, but we move in with the spring in our step on the back of some interesting and good stuff in the last week or two. So thank you.